Welcome to the Deep Dive. You give us the research, the articles, and we break down what you really need to know. Today, we're digging into a really significant moment in drug pricing, that October 2025 agreement, the one between the Trump administration and AstraZeneca.
That's right. And it wasn't the first one either. It came right after a similar deal with Pfizer just the month before.
Exactly. Both stemming from this, let's say, very assertive most favored nation policy, MFN for short.
And the sources we've looked at frame this in wildly different ways. Some see it as, finally fixing prices. Others see it as basically strong-arming by using trade laws.
It really feels like a clash, doesn't it? You've got the political need the administration had to show a win on drug costs. It was a big promise.
Definitely a very visible win. And then on the other side, you have AstraZeneca just trying to manage enormous risk. It was, well, pragmatic business for them.
So our mission here for you listening is to really unpack this deal. It had two main parts. We want to figure out, was this a genuine shakeup of how the U.S. prices drugs, something that might actually affect your wallet?
Or was it more about creating a new way to, well, coerce companies? A powerful new tool for the government, like some analysts are saying. Let's get into it.
Okay, to get the coercion angle, we have to start with the policy itself. Most favored nation, MFN.
The basic idea sounds simple enough.
Right. The U.S. government shouldn't pay more for a drug than the lowest price paid by another similar developed country.
Specifically, they looked at OECD countries, the developed economies with a GDP per person that's at least 60% of the US's.
But turning that idea into action, that's where it got explosive.
That's where the weaponization of trade policy comes in, as one analyst put it. They didn't use health policy levers, they used trade law.
And the specific tool was Section 232 of the Trade Expansion Act from way back in 1962.
And that's usually reserved for things like steel or aluminum, where imports might genuinely pose a national security risk. Think defense supplies, that kind of thing.
Applying it to pharmaceuticals, that was, let's say, unconventional.
Highly unconventional. It gave the threat incredible weight. The administration started by talking about tariffs up to 100% on imported drugs from companies that didn't play ball.
100% is already crippling for a global supply chain. But didn't the president float an even higher number? Like 200%?
They did suggest that, yes. And at that point, it's not just a negotiation tactic anymore.
No, it's basically threatening economic ruin, especially for a multinational like AstraZeneca, based in the UK, but with operations everywhere.
Exactly. It became an existential threat, which makes securing this deal, getting that tariff exemption, absolutely critical from their perspective.
You mentioned risk mitigation. This was pure survival, wasn't it?
Pretty much. There's that quote from AstraZeneca's CEO, Pascal Soriot. He actually admitted President Trump and his team had, quote, really kept me up at night.
Wow, that really tells you the kind of pressure they were under. It wasn't just a regulatory issue, it was personal high stakes.
Absolutely. And you have to remember the timing. Pfizer had just signed a very similar deal, maybe 10 days earlier, end of September.
The Pfizer precedent. So that set the stage.
It really did. It showed the administration wasn't bluffing. It laid out the blueprint for how companies could, quote unquote, voluntarily comply.
So when AstraZeneca, another huge player, agreed, that sent a message to the other companies being targeted,
A
right?
very clear message. There were about 15 companies on that initial list. AstraZeneca folding basically told them resistance was probably futile against this kind of trade pressure.
Okay, so that's the immense pressure, the context. Now let's look at the deal itself, the release, if you will. It had two main parts, two prongs.
Right. The first prong was aimed squarely at Medicaid, the U.S. Medicaid program.
And on paper, it looked huge. AstraZeneca promised to offer its entire range of prescription drugs to Medicaid at those MFN prices.
Yes, their whole portfolio. And the administration immediately hailed it as saving taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars, made it sound like the big comprehensive win they wanted.
Wait, our sources point out that Medicaid already gets some of the lowest drug prices in the U.S. because of legally required rebates, right?
That's a crucial context, yes. Medicaid has these mandatory rebates that often push the net price even lower than what the MFN standard would require.
So these hundreds of millions in savings, is that maybe a bit of creative counting, or at least not a massive change from the status quo for Medicaid?
Well, experts were pretty skeptical right away. The consensus was that this deal probably wouldn't result in, quote, a very big discount to Medicaid beyond what they already get.
So the actual financial impact, the real dollars saved, is mostly contained within the Medicaid budget itself.
Largely, yes. Medicaid drug spending is significant, maybe around $80 billion gross back in 2021. But the total U.S. drug market is what, over $500 billion a year?
So a drop in the bucket, relatively speaking.
Exactly. So while it's a win for the government's Medicaid budget spreadsheet, the experts were clear. This specific part of the deal isn't going to, quote, move the needle on U.S. rising health insurance premiums and out-of-pocket drug costs for most ordinary Americans.
Okay, so if the Medicaid part wasn't the big public win they needed, that brings us to the second prong, the more visible part.
Right. The TrumpRx.gov initiative, this flashy government-branded website.
Scheduled to launch early the next year, January 2026. And who was it aimed at?
Specifically, patients paying cash, people without insurance, or maybe those with high deductibles who find it cheaper to bypass their insurance for certain drugs.
Ah, so a direct-to-consumer play, essentially, offering visible discounts.
Exactly, the public face of the deal, delivering something tangible, something voters could see.
And let's not forget the other side of the bargain, the quid pro quo. AstraZeneca gets the pricing concessions.
And in return, they secured that vital three-year exemption from those Section 232 tariffs. That's huge.
But there was more, wasn't there? A big investment commitment.
Oh, yes. They publicly reaffirmed a plan to invest $50 billion in U.S. research and development and manufacturing by 2030.
$50 billion, including a specific new facility.
A new $4.5 billion facility in Virginia was part of that announcement.
So this wasn't just about drug prices then. It seems like the administration was also using this trade leverage to push for domestic investment. Jobs, R&D, bringing things back onshore.
It looks like a multi-pronged strategy, absolutely. You've got the trade policy angle, the industrial policy angle with the investment, and the healthcare politics all wrapped into one package deal.
Okay, given all that, let's break down who actually benefits, because the impact seems really uneven depending on your insurance situation.
Very uneven. Let's take the main groups. First, Medicaid patients.
As we said, probably minimal direct change for them.
Yeah.
Their costs are usually already very low, often zero. The savings go to the government.
Correct. Government savings, not really patient savings there.
Okay, second group, people with commercial insurance through work or those on Medicare Part D. That's most Americans.
And for them, likely zero financial benefit from this particular deal. It specifically carved out those big commercial and Medicare markets. The pricing in those areas was protected.
Which leaves the third group.
The uninsured and people with those high deductible plans who sometimes pay cash, they're the ones who might actually see a direct benefit from the discounts on TrumpRx.gov. Potentially big discounts, maybe up to 80% off the list price for certain drugs listed there.
But which drugs got listed on TrumpRx.gov? That seems really important. Did AstraZeneca put its bestsellers on sale?
No, not at all. That's where the strategy gets really shrewd. They picked specific drugs for the public platform.
Which ones?
Three respiratory inhalers, Breztri Aerosphere, Bevespi Aerosphere, and Airsupra.
Okay, inhalers, common conditions, but are they big revenue drivers?
Relatively new, branded products, yes, but not their blockbusters. They're lower risk candidates for deep public discounts. It creates this powerful political symbol, the image of an affordable inhaler without hurting their main profit centers.
So you contrast those inhalers with their big guns.
Right.
Like the cancer drugs to Grisso and Imfinzi, or their top seller, Farxiga, the diabetes drug.
Exactly. Those huge revenue generators were included in the MFM price commitment for Medicaid, that portfolio-wide promise.
But kept off the public-facing TrumpRx website.
Deliberately. Protecting the pricing for those drugs in the much larger, much more lucrative commercial and Medicare markets was clearly the priority for AstraZeneca.
That decision really highlights the segmentation, doesn't it? Discount here, protect profits there.
It does, and it leads us straight into maybe the biggest long-term consequence, the challenge this poses to pharmacy benefit managers, PBMs.
The middlemen. The companies that manage drug benefits for insurers, negotiate rebates, often operate behind the scenes.
Exactly. The creation of TrumpRx.gov is one challenge, but maybe even more significant is AstraZeneca's own parallel platform. They launched something called AstraZeneca Direct around the same time, September 2025.
AstraZeneca Direct, what did that offer?
It offered some of their drugs, like Farxiga and Airsupra, directly to patients at discounts up to 70% off list price, again, bypassing insurance and the PBM.
So they're essentially cutting out the middleman, going straight to the consumer.
That's the potential disruption. Normally, the manufacturer gives a big rebate to the PBM, but the patient paying at the counter often doesn't see that saving. They pay based on the high list price.
Right. The PBM manages the net cost for the insurer, not necessarily the patient's cost.
Precisely. This direct-to-consumer approach, both the government one and the company one, lets the manufacturer control the branding, they get the patient data, and crucially, they ensure the patient sees the lower price directly.
That completely undermines the PBM's traditional role, doesn't it? Managing rebates and formularies.
It challenges their value proposition significantly. It's not just about complying with tariff threats anymore. It looks like a longer-term strategy, testing new business models, maybe trying to regain control over pricing and patient relationships from the PBMs.
So this dual-platform thing, Trump Rx and AstraZeneca Direct, it's forcing the market to adapt.
It really is. The big question now is whether PBMs can adjust, or if this kind of fragmented two-tiered system, one price for cash payers, another for insured, will genuinely start to break down the pricing structures in the commercial market where most of the money is.
Okay, let's try to wrap this up. The core takeaway for you listening seems to be this. The AstraZeneca deal was definitely a political win for the administration. And for AstraZeneca, it was a smart business move to dodge those massive tariffs.
No doubt about that. But for the average insured American looking at their own health costs, their premiums, their co-pays, the direct impact is likely minimal to none. Imperceptible, really.
So the real significance isn't necessarily immediate cost savings for everyone.
Probably not. The true significance, looking back, is how it established this powerful new playbook. It showed the executive branch could effectively use trade policy, the threat of tariffs under laws like Section 232, as a lever, a coercive tool to achieve domestic policy goals. In this case, healthcare goals.
Bypassing the usual routes through Congress or the courts, which can be slow and difficult.
Exactly. It demonstrated a way to force specific outcomes much more directly. That capability, that precedent, that's the real legacy here.
Which leaves us with a final thought for you to chew on. This deal effectively carved out a segmented two-tiered drug market in the U.S. You've got these new direct-to-consumer platforms like TrumpRx.gov emerging alongside the traditional PBM-managed system.
So the provocative question is, can these DTC platforms genuinely disrupt the PBM's dominance and start to pull down prices in the broader commercial and Medicare markets?
Or will the pharmaceutical industry manage to keep these discounts contained, essentially maintaining that premium pricing structure where it matters most to their bottom line in the larger insured markets? That battle for market control, for who sets the price, it feels like it's really just heating up.